Monster Man, Episode 216, Lamassu, Greater to Luck Eater. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are starting off the L chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. Before we do that, though, I want to respond to a piece of listener mail. This message came in from listener and Patreon supporter Katie, who asks how doing this show has affected my gaming. That's a really interesting question. Now, in all honesty, I am not running a fantasy game at present. I'm playing in a D&D game, but the game that I'm currently running is a post-apocalyptic RPG. That's Other Dust, published by Sine Nomine. If you've played Stars Without Number, it's basically the post-apocalyptic version of that. And like other Sine Nomine games, it has a system that is mainly based on older editions of Dungeons & Dragons. And what that means is that many monsters are compatible. And I have actually used creatures from both the Monster Manual 2 and the Fiend Folio, and in fact one from Monster Manual 1, in my post-apocalyptic RPG, because there are a lot of creatures, particularly in the Fiend Folio, that are just kind of alien wildlife, and they fit in pretty nicely, right? You can imagine the assassin bug existing in a post-apocalyptic landscape. One of the characters who sort of works for the PCs, one of their followers, is someone that they rescued from a yellow musk creeper, for instance. As I've gone through, I've talked a lot about what kind of the different categories of monster, I guess, and certain categories are very applicable to that game. So a lot of the kind of landscape hazard monsters tend to turn up, while the various alien wildlife have a tendency to turn up, whereas by contrast, something like a Kirin is not going to turn up. And the villains of my game tend to be, you know, humans or something quite human-like. But looking at different monsters that sort of accomplish the same purpose has also given me, I feel like, a little bit more confidence to, you know, adapt things and move them around. I've not always been very confident about my own handling of rules. I don't think of myself as a rules guy, and I kind of, with Dungeons & Dragons anyway, I came up in the 3rd edition era, which was a time when there was sort of this perception that the system was a very complex, interconnecting set of parts, and if you pushed one of them in the wrong direction, it could have all kinds of knock-on consequences, which is true to some extent, but also that wouldn't be the end of the world. You know, you can experiment. So I feel like studying these monsters has helped me be more confident and comfortable in experimenting with how I use them in game. But definitely I have used a number of creatures that I would not ever have thought of. Now I want to turn Katie's question back out to you, the audience. Has something that I've said on Monster Man, or has a monster that I've covered that you might not otherwise have used, influenced your game? I'd really like to hear about that. So thank you very much, Katie, for writing in, and let's get on to some monsters. First up, the Lamassu Greater. I normally like to address each monster in a good amount of detail, but honestly, it's a Lamassu, but it's greater. It leads a group of lesser Lamassu. There's nothing wrong with the Lamassu Greater. If you ever thought to yourself, well, I'd like to include a Lamassu, but my characters are so powerful that it doesn't feel like it would make a difference, or I've got this group of Lamassu, and I feel like it would be cool if they had a leader, but not one that was too interesting, then along comes the Lamassu Greater. It's fine, but I don't feel like there's anything much to say about it other than that it is the minimum possible effort that you could do to create a version of the Lamassu that's slightly more powerful. It is everything I said about the Lamassu, but just for higher level characters. Then we come to the Land Lamprey. Excuse me, the Lamprey, Land. Now, the Lamprey, Land is exactly the kind of monster that might very well turn up in my post-apocalyptic game. Now, it's not called a Lamprey, Giant, even though it is very big by Lamprey standards. Like, Lampreys are not all that large. And it lives on land, unlike the Lamprey, which is a fish. It may not technically be a fish. It's an aquatic animal. The Lamprey, Land loses some of the horror of the Lamprey because some of the horror of a fish type monster is that it's in that murky, cloudy, or dark water and you don't know where it is, which is not so much true of land animals. The illustration fails to convey exactly how horrible a lamprey's mouth is, but the idea that it kind of latches onto you and sucks out your blood is present in the monster, and there's actually kind of a bit that's both funny and mechanically interesting, which is that if the lamprey bites onto you and is sucking out your blood, you're encumbered if it's on like one of your limbs, on one of your arms, right? Because you're trying to fight and also you have this 3-foot blood-sucking fish dangling from your limb. So the lamprey, land is pretty good. There's, you know, it's based on a real-world animal, and that real-world animal is hideous. And it has just enough little mechanical interest to make it something more than just a nuisance monster. It's still a nuisance monster, but it's a nuisance monster with a little bit of an interesting spin on it. So I'm pretty pleased with the lamprey, land. It's not going to set the world on fire, but if you were making your way through filthy lower levels of some dungeon, right, where it has once flooded and then the water has receded to just leave a nasty layer of muck down there, and you're groping through these lightless caverns, and then something sticks onto your arm and starts sucking your blood out, and that's when the goblins attack. I think the lamprey, land is pretty good. Finally, we have the Luck Eater, and the Luck Eater is a fun concept that I think could do with a few small changes to make that concept work a little better in game. So the idea behind the Luck Eater is basically that it's just what it sounds like. It's a supernatural creature that feeds on your luck. It appears in the form of a little kitty cat, and it purrs, and everyone who hears its purring has to make a save versus spell or come to be attached to it. They love the little kitty, and they'll protect it. Then it hangs around, draining off your luck, imposes a penalty on you, and basically supernaturally sates itself with the difference between what your luck would normally be and, you know, how you're rolling after the penalty. That's fine. It also increases the likelihood that you'll run into some monsters, and if you fail to do that, it actually sets you to fighting against each other, which I suppose is okay. The problem with the Luck Eater's attachment power is that it forces you to save over and over again until you are attached to it, and then you're stuck that way. And once it's got all the luck out of your system, it packs up and leaves. And if you try to stop it, all the people who are attached to it, which by this point is going to be everybody, are going to defend it. So it has an interesting gimmick, but all of the possible avenues by which the players might do something fun with it, like realize that it's draining their luck and then craftily introduce it into an enemy's baggage or something like that, like all of those avenues are closed off because basically the party are going to be kind of in lockstep about this thing. Ultimately, they're all going to fail their saves, and then they're going to want to keep it around, and then they're going to take the penalty, and then, you know, I mean, that's it, really. It's going to drain their luck, and then it's going to leave. The end. So I really like the idea that, you know, you find some hapless adventurer who has died, and there next to their body is a sad little kitty, and your player characters are like, oh no, this person has died, and now poor kitty has no one to take care of it. Don't worry, buddy, here, have some milk. I feel like the only smart move in response to this is to kill the little kitty, which I don't think that's very nice. So the players either have to do something pretty awful, or they get steered around like a bunch of chumps, not even really getting to choose what they do. They just get to get into some fights at a penalty. But having the Luck Eater just be a jinx, taking off some of the restrictions about what player characters can and can't do to it, feels like it opens up more possibilities. I feel like we've had a jinxy creature before, and I similarly thought it wasn't all that great. It was the one that imposed a bit of a jinx on everyone in its vicinity, which is basically doesn't really make a difference, right? Everybody was suffering under the penalty, except for one person, which is even worse. So I think if you just get rid of the basically ultimately unmakeable saves, and just let players react to the sweet little kitty the way that you would hope people react to a sweet little kitty, the Luck Eater will work just fine. And it would be especially good if, you know, they encountered some hapless character who had this pet, and then later on they encounter some other hapless character, but with the same pet. I think that that would be a better setup to reveal the identity of the Luck Eater. It's at its least interesting when it's just down a dungeon or encountered in the wild, but unfortunately, the entry doesn't really give a whole lot of detail about the circumstances under which you encounter a Luck Eater, which seem to me to be the salient points. All right, that is about all the time that we have for today. Please join me again next episode when we'll be continuing our journey through the L chapter of Monster Manual 2, and we're going to talk about seasonally appropriate lycanthropes on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.